Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What would it take to get you into an electric car? We've heard this before, that the EVs are the future, but now it's starting to really look like that future is finally here. Next year, there will be many, many more models of electric cars on the market, but is the market ready for them? Are you ready to be an owner of an electric car? What questions do you have about the EVs? Have you seen them around? Have you been curious? Give us a call. If you've already got one, what lessons have you learned and would you recommend one? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. And you could also tweet us at the source, TPR Source. And joining us this hour, we're joined by Lyle Huffstetler. He is a Clean Cities Program Manager for the Alamo Area Council of Governments, ACOG. Lyle, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Doug Melnick's with us, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio. Doug, good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
And Dave Tuttle is here. He is the Research Associate for the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. Dave Tuttle, welcome to The Source.
Good to be here.
So let me start off with Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio. What does the city see the future with electric vehicles?
So as you know, we recently adopted our SA Climate Ready Plan with the goal of driving towards carbon neutrality by 2050. And the question is, how do we do that? When we start looking at our greenhouse gas emissions, 38% of those at the community level comes from transportation. When you break that down any some more, 80% of that 38% is from people driving their own cars and trucks. So how do we improve the efficiency of vehicles on the road today and tomorrow? And what we're seeing cities do is begin focusing on transitioning towards electrification, electrification of buildings and vehicles. I think the goal is, as we clean the grid, electric vehicles are going to be a much more efficient and cleaner option for our community, as well as more cost effective than traditional internal combustion engines.
So what incentives or what kind of nudging can the city do to help people make that choice?
All right. So where we are right now is, and I think one of the things we want to make very clear is the city is not foreseeing our role as requiring anybody drive any specific vehicle.
So we're not going to ban cars.
We're not going to ban vehicles. I think what we're trying to do is look at market trends and consumer demand. And looking at what we see now and what those projections are, and then how do we help facilitate it? So one of the things that we've been working on in coordination with CPS Energy is a citywide EV, electric vehicle charging infrastructure plan. Where are those areas of housing, job centers, lifestyle centers, where do people spend a considerable amount of time where charging infrastructure would help facilitate people being more secure about being able to charge when and where they want. We're also looking at electric vehicle codes. When we build new homes, new businesses, is there a way of making them EV ready, which could be as simple as just providing some basic conduit? So if somebody comes in and they want to have a charging infrastructure in their home, it's cheaper. We're also we'll be working with local dealers. These are the folks who are the first stop for somebody interested in purchasing an electric vehicle. What are the barriers to somebody buying a vehicle? Are there things that we can do to help facilitate and remove some of those barriers? But at the end of the day, like I said, we just want to be able to support where the community wants to go regarding how they get around the city.
And so, Lyle Huffstetler, can you tell me about at ACOG? Y'all are very concerned with air quality. It's part of what y'all do overall. So y'all see electric vehicles as a way to take us out of non-attainment?
Yes, absolutely. As Doug mentioned, motor vehicles account for a significant portion of air pollution in San Antonio. And that pollution directly contributes to ozone, which, as you said, we're in non-attainment for. So the cleaner that our mobile sources are, our transportation sources are, that's going to directly impact our ozone levels and bring them down.
Dave Tuttle at the University of Texas at Austin Energy Institute. What does the future look like from the view of the consumer for EVs?
Well, I think you're going to see more and more manufacturers make compelling vehicles. And the way they'll really spread is not just trying to appeal to folks who either have a environmental bent or energy security bent. There'll be better vehicles that happen to be electric. So there's a video that Ford put on, for example, about their electric vehicle prototype F-150, towing 1.25 million pounds, for example. They'll make, when they eventually produce their F-150 EV, a better F-150. And that's what that video, if you go search it on YouTube. I've been driving an electric vehicle. I'm on my second one for 8 years now. And bluntly, I think once the vehicles get to be where people understand how they're better vehicles and they're more compelling, they'll sort of sell themselves. And so there's a spreading of it. So beyond the small number, relatively modest number of folks who will pay more money for an environmentally green vehicle, just the manufacturers internalizing that they can make better vehicles with electric powertrains and then producing the vehicles and then making them available across the country, that'll help also. But, and then also the utilities trying to leverage them as a grid asset, not just something that could supposedly threaten the grid. These vehicles are new types of load for the utilities. They're large, flexible, and intelligent, and they can be very synergistic with the grid.
So, as you said, they sell themselves. It seems like the industry is not pushing them very hard.
I wouldn't say that. I mean,
I don't see commercials for them. I see them for trucks and other things.
This is true. The Tesla Model 3 is now the best-selling luxury car of any, for example, without any advertising. So more of those types of vehicles that people become passionate, that say, I got to have that, will help. But you're right, I think we're at the bow wave of a bunch of vehicles coming out that people get even more excited about.
Some people say that even with the larger sticker price that exists for an electric car, it's still cheaper to own than if you get what they call the ICE vehicle, the internal combustion engine. Does that math work, Dave Tuttle?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. I've done an analysis and published a paper 7 years ago, even back then when the prices were higher. The total cost of ownership, even if you pay a little bit more, there's no oil changes, the brakes last forever. The electricity at the rate that we have generally in Texas are about $1 a gallon. And so if you do the math, it doesn't take that much time for you to actually make up the difference.
And so we're talking about owning an electric car. These are now, they've been on the market for a while, but now they're saying in 2020 could be a breakthrough year for electric vehicles. There are going to be many more models available. You can buy them at dealers, or you can buy them online. You can get the Tesla just by clicking through on your computer, doing it all sitting down, and one will show up in a matter of weeks. And there are people who just love their electric vehicles. But is this the future, and what does it mean? How would it disrupt the economy that we now have if so many people buy them and there's fewer gasoline need and fewer maintenance need? And what happens to all the mechanics and all these other issues? Tell us what you think about electric vehicles. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In just a few years, experts predict there's going to be a dramatic change in the adoption of electric vehicles. This is going to impact cities like San Antonio. So how is San Antonio preparing for more electric vehicles? What does the market really want? Is this going to be a consumer-driven revolution in transportation? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. If you have really practical questions about incentives or how to make it work or how would it integrate into your life, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Taylor on the phone. And let's see here. Taylor, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is about the energy production. So with most of the electricity being coal-based, how much are electric vehicles really going to improve the global warming effect? If we're going to be using more electricity, would we be burning more coal for that electricity?
All right, Taylor, great question. So let me go to Doug Melnick on that. He's the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio. San Antonio still has coal-based power, but although it has diversified, but is that kind of negate the benefits of a EV?
No, I think the ultimate benefit in terms of air quality and carbon reductions is driven by the cleanliness of our grid, and as we drive towards that 100% carbon-free grid, yes, then we'll see really the most significant benefits. But right now, the CPS energy supply is even cleaner than the ERCOT grid in general. We still do have coal in the portfolio. CPS has brought additional natural gas, which is also still a greenhouse gas emitting source, but continues to bring more and more renewables online. So I think as we see that grid decarbonize, we'll continue to see more and more benefits from electrification. But they definitely go hand in hand.
And Dave Tuttle, Research Associate for the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. I've heard it described that electric vehicles are actually more energy efficient because of the way the electricity is used. It's like directly goes into the power chain. You know, using gasoline, it has to convert, you know, there's a lot of wasted energy in that system. Is that true?
Yeah. So an electric motor is 90-95% efficient. Gasoline engines are 25% efficient. So if you, and also I wanted to get back to the other question. First of all, our ERCOT grid is relatively clean. There's a great website on the Union of Concerned Scientists that you can look at and type in your zip code, and it will tell, given the grid mix in your area, how much cleaner an electric vehicle is. So we have a relatively clean grid already today. As a matter of fact, with the huge amount of wind, and cleaner natural gas versus coal and nuclear power and some hydro, and now an uptick in ERCOT on solar, our grid today is already cleaner. So even if the grid has some coal in it, it's still cleaner. And there's a tool that Daimler, if you search on it, it might be OptiSource, has where you can do a well-to-wheels analysis that even a coal-powered electric vehicle can in some cases be cleaner if it's 100% coal, and no grid in North America is 100% coal. It's never that bad in terms of emissions. It's still cleaner because of that efficiency of the motor being well over 90% compared to an internal combustion engine.
And tomorrow's grid will be even cleaner.
Yeah, that's the thing. You could have a 10-year-old electric vehicle, and it can become a zero-emissions vehicle whenever the grid gets to zero emissions. Or if you get clean energy from your utility, then, you know, Austin Energy or CPS in San Antonio, you could purchase or maybe have rooftop solar on your house to have zero emissions there.
Let's go to a voicemail. This is from Elise.
Hi, my name is Elise, and I'm the owner of a Tesla Model 3. I bought an electric car because I thought it would be unethical to buy a fossil fuel car, knowing that it would be bad for the environment. It is a bit more expensive on the monthly bill, but I think it kind of makes up for that when you have the cheap cost of electricity and not having to worry about any fuel shortages. I charge at my house. It's pretty nice not having to stop and get gas on a cold, wet day like this. So I do appreciate that. I haven't run out of battery yet. The only time I kind of came close was when I went to the Kickapoo Cavern, which does not have a supercharger out there, but on normal daily trips, there is no concern about battery. Some of the other small things I like about my car is not breathing in fumes, regenerative braking, where the power gets put back into the battery when you stop. I'm actually going to get some solar panels this month, so then my car will be 100% power and clean energy. I know CPS isn't 100% on clean energy, so that was important to me. I highly recommend getting an electric car. I think if anyone just tried it for a week or two, they would probably not want to go back to a fossil fuel car.
And that is from Elise, one of our listeners. And thank you for that voicemail, Elise. Let me go over to, Lyle Hofstetler. He is with ACOG. And can you talk about the charging stations and the programs you have? Like, y'all work with employers to put in charging stations. Is that right?
Yes. So we promote incentives that allow business owners to put EV charging stations in their facilities. This is a program offered by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality as part of their Texas Emissions Reduction Plan. This is an alternative fuel facilities program that's actually going to be launching in a few months. I don't have an exact date on that, but they offer a reimbursement on the purchase and installation of electric vehicle chargers at businesses. And the more businesses that adopt or that input EV charging stations, it's going to make it that much more feasible for the general population to adopt these vehicles, where there'll be more opportunities to charge.
And Dave Tuttle, talk about charging. You're an owner of a vehicle. You've had two EVs. Has it ever been a problem for you?
No, not really. Just that blunt.
So do you charge at home? Do you have you plug into the wall? I know there's different levels, level 1, 2, and 3. Level 1 is you just have a wall charger. It plugs into a standard outlet, and it may take overnight, but it'll charge you up.
Right, and so the level 1 is exactly what you said. Just plug it into a normal outlet, and it can consume about what a coffee pot would consume. And if you have, a plug-in hybrid like a Chevrolet Volt or a Honda Clarity plug-in hybrid, then even with that, it could plug it in and charge it overnight. And by the time you unplug in the morning, you're good to go. I have a level 2 charger at my home. That's where I've been charging the vast majority of the times that I've had over the last 8 years. And it just, as the caller mentioned with her Model 3, it is just convenient to not have to go fight in the lines with the gas stations, have card readers that might have skimmers on them, or might not take the card or not put out the receipt. You have your own personal refueling station at home. And so the people who tend to buy the vehicles today are the ones that can charge at home, because that's the most convenient. Over time, what we'll see are programs like they were mentioning, either in Austin, San Antonio, where there's help in getting multifamily, people who live in multifamily homes, the ability to charge either at their apartment or condo complex or at public level 3 charging stations.
Right. I've read that up 90% plus of folks who own an EV are charging at home. But I got an email from Eduardo. What options of future options exist for apartment dwellers with no garage that need to recharge an electric vehicle? So Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer with the City of San Antonio, is this something y'all are looking at as y'all are considering this new charging infrastructure?
Yes. And so this study we're working on, we're hoping to be done by the end of the year, is a electric vehicle fleet conversion and citywide electric vehicle infrastructure study. It includes assessing market barriers to ownership, as well as, just as you expressed, if somebody lives in an apartment building, how do they charge? And so it'll be working with the development community, working with CPS and other partners to figure out how do we overcome those barriers, whether it's through how new buildings are built or retrofit or different incentives. We're also, again, as I mentioned, doing a spatial analysis of where all of this infrastructure should be.
So what about public input on that?
So actually, we have two surveys that are out right now. One is just general questions regarding people's opinions around electric vehicles, and then the other surveys around specific locations people would like to see charging infrastructure. People can go to saspeakup.com or sanantonio.gov/sustainability, and they can access those surveys. And we'll be taking that information that will help guide us as we start moving towards implementation next year.
And we're going to have the link to those surveys on our website at tpr.org so folks can weigh in. I mean, if you don't tell the city what you want, you're not going to get what you want. So go ahead and check that out. Let's go back to the phones with Elisa. Elisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First, I own a Nissan Leaf, and I absolutely love it. I'm glad we're talking about charging. So my question is, how is the city working to implement equitable charging? I live and work in District 1, so I'm really lucky. I can go charge at public facilities or places that have higher concentrations of wealth, so there are more Tesla models there. But if I venture out into other city council districts, it is more difficult to charge. So how is the city prioritizing equitable charging to ensure that all income levels can participate in EV ownership?
Great question. I'm really glad you asked that. Doug Melnick?
Yep. And I was going to mention that. That's one of the key components of the plan that we're working on is how do we address the inequities? I mean, clearly, electric vehicles are not cheap. I think we're looking at, I think the first step is going out into those key neighborhoods and really having discussions with the people who live there to start hearing what their thoughts and concerns are.
But how aggressive will the city be or CPS be? Because there's a chicken and egg syndrome a little bit. You know, if the city is waiting for the demand to build, it's going to slow down getting to where we want to be, right?
Right. But I think the key to this, when we start talking about, you know, if the barrier is the cost of an electric vehicle, what's the role of the city, the utility, or other stakeholders to come up with ways of mitigating some of that excessive cost? Is it incentive programs? Is it rebate programs? I think, you know, in terms of the deployment of charging infrastructure, I think there's a lot of transformation going on across the market. And you know, is this something that the city or the utility wants to be the lead on? Do we need to own this infrastructure, or will this be more market driven? And then how do we help support the market to provide that charging infrastructure across the city? So I think you're absolutely right. It's a chicken and egg, but there's also trying to overcome some of those entry point costs that we need to address.
Yeah. Lyle Huffstetler with ACOG, you are working with multiple municipalities across San Antonio, all counties as well. Is this something that other local governments are looking at?
As far as?
As trying to encourage or make available, or are they thinking about charging stations? Is this something that is, you know, that we will see outside of San Antonio?
I think certainly. I see San Antonio as taking the lead on that initiative, but I do believe that smaller local governments are going to follow suit as soon as the success of that program is realized. And ACOG will be working with those municipalities to ensure that they're on board as well.
Dave Tuttle at the Energy Institute, UT Austin. What's this look like statewide?
Well, I think each city has its own situation. For example, if you're out in West Texas and people need pickups, it's going to be a while before there are a lot of electric pickups. So it's the urban areas that need to focus on this more, and I think that the public participation that you've been mentioning is important, and that'll drive that. Hey, one of the other things I'd like to bring up is not only is there a bow wave of new electric vehicles that are coming to the marketplace soon, but as time passes, we're going to get more and more attractive prices in the resale market for these vehicles that'll help with equity some, because the average car depreciates about 50% every 3 years. And so fairly quickly, we can have these vehicles that are in great shape that have all the performance and
right
efficiency and emissions attributes that we're talking about become far more affordable.
All right, so we'll be looking at that going forward. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. A lot of callers on the board. I will get you on the air when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Esmeralda Santiago left Puerto Rico for Brooklyn with her family at age 13. She wrote about it in her memoir, When I Was Puerto Rican. Other Puerto Ricans were not pleased with her use of the past tense.
The first thing they would say to me is, I'm 100% Puerto Rican. Just with their first words, they're already diminishing my percentage of Puerto Ricanness.
A conversation with Esmeralda Santiago on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the adoption of electric vehicles. Will this happen soon? Will it happen eventually? Will the United States fight off electric vehicles and stay on to gasoline-powered cars? We know that in China is definitely pushing the adoption of EVs. Europe is also looking towards that as well. What's going to happen here? It's still kind of wait and see. We'll see what the market provides and what consumers are willing to go for. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let's go with Lee on the phone. Lee, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm a senior citizen, and I'm living on a semi-fixed income. I do gigs and, you know, things like that on the side to make my grocery bill go away, but how am I going to afford an electric car that costs $30,000 or something?
All right, Lee, thank you for the question. Dave Tottle, Research Associate for the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. How is this going to enter the marketplace? You know, is this really a top-end thing?
No, not really. The average transaction price of a car in the U.S. today is about $35,000. Average pickup is about $44,000 for those new cars. And the price of EVs has come down, and with batteries getting better and better over time, I think you'll see them get below 20. It's going to take a while for the technology, but for a new car, but the prices will get better and better over time. Even a Tesla Model 3 that the caller had talked about, those are $38,000. This caller talked about, even needing something or desiring something less than that. I wouldn't anticipate it being in the next 5 years, but as prices decline, the new prices will come down as the batteries get less expensive, and then there are great values in the resale EV market.
Right.
I've heard of people getting a great Leaf that was an excellent car for $6,000 or $7,000.
Yeah, and so there are much fewer parts than for a electric vehicle than for a gas powered vehicle. You don't need an exhaust system. You don't need a radiator and a transmission and all these other things. Once they get the supply chain going and the battery cost down, these cars could be significantly more affordable, more attractive to the consumer, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I first bought my first EV in 2011, batteries were $1,000 per kilowatt hour, and now they're under $200. I'm not sure we'll have the same rate of improvement in cost over the next 10 years, but it's still going to improve. There are more and more people across the world working on the problem of reducing the prices, and more manufacturers building gigafactories to help reduce the prices. So we'll see prices decline. We'll also see some very reliable, as you were mentioning, the simplicity of the powertrain. There's basically two ball bearings and a spinning rotor compared to thousands of components in an internal combustion engine. And so they can last longer.
All right, let's go back to the phones with Rick. And Rick, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. So my question is, it's actually two questions. What are we going to do with batteries when the cars start to deteriorate? And is the fire department or rescue authorities ready to deal with potential hazmat issues because of accidents when these cars get hit? Thank you.
Okay, good question. So let me go to Doug on this one. You're the city guy, so I want to ask you this. First responders, are they being trained about how it's going to dealing with electric vehicles?
So I don't know for sure. My gut tells me yes, that Chief Hood is on top of current technology and any risks that the firefighters would face, but that's something that we can check.
All right, and Dave Tuttle, back to you on this, since you are at the Energy Institute. Batteries, is that dealing with the old ones, is that a problem?
I think that it will get solved. Just one of the most recycled devices in the world today are car lead acid batteries. And so when there get to be a number of those, they will be, and so the auto manufacturers are already looking at this. And so there aren't too many of these batteries yet that have failed. So there are ideas on how to recycle them already being pursued. And secondly, there are ideas like second use, where maybe the battery doesn't give enough range for a car, but it could be very useful to be a stationary battery in a home to back up if the grid goes down. So there's talk about second uses. Secondly, getting back to the question about fire, absolutely, an auto manufacturer cannot put out a car without having training for first responders. And if you go search the web, you can find out some of the training packages that are offered there for first responders. And the National Fire Protection Agency or Administration has some information about that, too.
It's interesting, though, there seems to be some sort of anxiety about people driving around vehicles with these batteries as if that were a traveling hazard, as opposed to driving around this bomb of gasoline in your vehicle. I mean, why is one safer or not safer than the other, Dave Tuttle?
Well, I'm looking at the NFPA website right now. The last time I looked at this, National Fire Protection Association, about 160,000 conventional gasoline and diesel vehicles end their lives each year with a fire, 160,000. And I think it's become so commonplace that most drivers have at some time in their experience driving have seen a car off to the side burning up. And when we hear about one EV fire, it makes national news. So I think there's a disproportional fear about this.
It's a novelty bias. Let's go to John. Ariel on the phones. Ariel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. My first Prius was a 2005. At the time, there was all kinds of horror stories about the batteries. That car, I drove it for over 10 years, 220,000 miles. The original battery was doing fine, thank you.
All right, so that's a story of praise for driving the EV. Let's go now to John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question, and that was, is the city of San Antonio doing anything to move their own fleets to electric? And this would also include maybe some of the larger trucks, the garbage trucks, the buses, and also the smaller cars for the city. Thank you.
All right, John, thank you for the call. Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer, City of San Antonio.
Yes, and that's a key component of this plan that I've been talking about that will be completed by the end of the year. We've been looking at the entire fleet. We've been focusing initially on our light-duty passenger vehicles in this year's budget. There has been funding allocated to buy our first three this coming year. So we'll start getting that experience and being able to hopefully start building awareness and support about the benefits and the
But like all the city departments, like the airport, they're talking about switching over to EVs. And there's a different level of technology that you would use for buses and things like that, high-capacity vehicles.
Right. And so currently we've been evaluating for the heavier vehicles, also keeping an eye on some of the larger pickup trucks, just to see where that technology is. But I think initially we want to really start with that proven technology for those passenger vehicles. We're looking at, I believe we have about 2,300 on-road vehicles, including sedans, vans, SUVs, trucks. We think the lowest hanging fruit are those passenger vehicles that would be the easiest to transition.
Dave Tuttle, you're over at the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. And the other sectors of the energy world, gasoline producers, are they worried about this?
Well, I think that they might be. It's competition, but this is Texas, and we tend to have an attitude that competition is good, and we don't shy away from it.
Well, that's the myth. I mean, you know, you can't open a Tesla dealership in Texas. It's against the law.
Well, but you can still order it. We have five Teslas on my street alone. I have a Model 3 also. It was easy. You just order it. It's not quite as simple as just ordering something on Amazon, but it wasn't that far removed from it.
Well, a lot of people, they may have seen the documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? Documentary came out in 2006, talking about the 1996 EV1 produced by General Motors. And the industry basically, according to that narrative, saw the threat of electric vehicles and they killed it. I mean, was that a fairy tale or is that based in reality, Dave Tuttle?
No, I think that that's, by the way, we're having an event in Austin at the Formula One track in early February. It's not a UT event. It's fully charged. And Chelsea Sexton, one of the protagonists of that movie, will be there. And she's helping to coordinate that event on EVs. And there was a subsequent movie of that, of Revenge of the Electric Car. I think that what has changed is the technology has progressed to the point where some of these manufacturers are realizing that they can make a better car that happens to be electric, and they see a trajectory to be profitable making them.
And disruptors like the Tesla, Elon Musk, you know, they can't be ignored any longer, right?
Exactly. And also, and whatever happens in the U.S. as far as emissions or miles per gallon, fuel efficiency standards, I won't say it won't make a difference, but there are EU and Chinese thrusts that no matter what, global manufacturers have to deal with this anyway, even if there was no technology or governmental policy push. The manufacturers have to develop this technology and see it progress because of the Chinese market, which is the largest automotive market in the world at 27 million units per year sold versus our 17, more cars sold in China each year.
Right, and then also India as well next after that. Let's take a break. We're going to have more questions and comments about the electric vehicle. What does the future look like? We'll talk about range. You know, that seems to be the barrier that a lot of people have. What is up with range on EVs? 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about electric vehicles. Is an EV right for you? The number is 210-614-8980. You will be seeing more and more of these on the road. Will you be in one of them? 210-614-8980. Lyle Hofstetler with the ACOG, and you're the Clean Cities Program Manager. Can you tell me about incentives? I keep hearing about how, well, it's a $35,000 car, but you take off all this money and it's a lot cheaper. What it really exists and how do I get that?
Yeah, so there are federal and state incentives. I want to talk about the federal first. They offer a $7,500 rebate on EV purchases for most models. Now, once a manufacturer hits 200,000 EV sales, then the government starts to phase out those incentives.
So is that an annual number or is that total?
Total.
Okay, so then how do I know when that is still viable?
So fueleconomy.gov has a table of the deadlines for these incentives. Most are, you can take advantage of the full $7,500. It's GM and Tesla whose federal incentives are being phased out. You can get $1,875 rebate for those vehicles for Tesla until December, and for GM, which is Chevy and Cadillac, until March of 2020.
Okay, and then what about state stuff?
So the state offers an incentive as well, $2,500 for the purchase of a new electric vehicle, or you can lease it for a 3-year term and get that $2,500. However, going back to your point about Teslas not being able to be sold in Texas, that eliminates them from this state incentive. The state of Texas has written it such that only vehicles sold in Texas can take advantage of the $2,500 state incentive. So that, unfortunately, excludes Teslas from
that. And I should probably outline a little bit more about why Teslas have this problem in Texas. In Texas, there is a law that you have to have a dealership and a dealership license. And Tesla didn't want to go that way. They wanted to sell directly to the consumers. And dealers don't like that. And, you know, people who own car dealers make a lot of money, and so they're able to fight that law and keep Teslas from coming to Texas. You can still buy one. You can buy one over the computer. You just kind of click on through and make that purchase. So what about range anxiety? You know, people, Dave Tuttle with the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin, people feel like, I want one of these cars. I can use one. I typically don't drive more than 100 miles a day, but I sure would like to be able to make a road trip if I need to. Is that something that is being solved?
Well, yeah, it already had been solved. My first EV was actually a plug-in hybrid Chevy Bolt, and there is no range anxiety with that. A plug-in hybrid operates like a battery electric for the first 50 miles, let's say, and then it turns into a hybrid like a Prius. And so if you drive it around town, you can electrify your commute, and if you want to take it from San Antonio to Dallas or whatever you want to do, New York to L.A., you just stop and get conventionally fueled. So if somebody has those needs, they could look at a plug-in hybrid, and there are a number of those still on the market. They get forgotten sometimes. And then pure battery electrics, there are charging networks. For example, Tesla has its own supercharging network. So there's one that I've used up in Waco at the Collins Street Bakery. And it's basically, I think it's a 10-bay there. And on the screen, it will tell you the trip plan and where you need to stop. You pull in, you just back in, plug in the coupler, and it automatically negotiates and starts charging and gets you on the road again at a very quick pace. And that supercharger charges at up to 100 times faster than what you might charge at home.
Right. And Beaker TX on Twitter asking us with a tweet about that as well. He wants to know if there's any comments on city or state plans for travel corridors, trying to put more energy towards that. Doug Melnick?
Yep. People should be familiar with a program called Electrify America. It was funded through the VW settlement for the diesel emissions.
Dieselgate.
Dieselgate. And basically, that's exactly what it is. It's a national program to start building out these EV corridors with fast charging stations. And we do have one in San Antonio. And so the goal is that it can help remove some of that range anxiety, that if you want to get from point A to point B, there's fast charging stations along the way.
There are apps like Charge Hub, other apps that you can just download onto your smartphone that will GPS you to the closest and show you where they are. And also, people rate them. They'll tell you if they're working. And you could also, I check online on some of these apps and tell you if it's actually being used at that moment, see if it's free. Let's go back to the phones, 210-614-8980. Philip. And Philip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, two quick questions. Number one is, I know a gas vehicle, just buying the gas, costs between maybe 7 cents and 16 cents a mile to buy purchase the gas. What is it cost per mile for the electric cost? That's the first question. Second question is, if we do away with if we come to electric vehicles and do away with gas vehicles, therefore the gas motor vehicle tax goes away, both federal and state, that funds most of our highway construction as well as major roads in San Antonio. What's the thought of how they're going to recoup that necessary revenue, because it's not going to be coming in on gas tax? And those are my two questions. Thanks.
All right, Philip. We'll go with the easy one first. Dave Tuttle, what about the price per mile?
That'll depend upon the type of vehicle. For example, an electric F-150 will be less efficient than an electric Leaf or Tesla. So you have to look at it just like a gas equivalent, where you'd have a pickup getting less gas mileage on a conventional vehicle. I would look at fueleconomy.gov. It's a very useful website. They even have a mobile app to do that, and they'll have numbers that help out with that. Secondly, what the caller mentioned as far as the gasoline tax, absolutely, that is an issue. And I think if you talk to all the reasonable EV drivers that I know, there's a willingness to pay our fair share for road taxes. And there are moves that maybe make it a fixed fee that's equivalent to what you'd pay in gasoline yearly when you renew your license plate, for example, something that helps also share the burden for EV drivers.
And Doug Melnick, is that something that the city, y'all are, you know, how do y'all fund your programs? Does that come out of gas tax at all? Or?
Yep. So for the city vehicles, the city has a vehicle replacement fund. So basically every time a new vehicle is purchased, that department pays into that fund on a annual basis. And then we always have the funding to for future replacements. I think as we start evaluating the cost benefit of transitioning to electric vehicles, we need to start taking into account the whole life cycle costs. That does it make business sense to buy more vehicles sooner than later in order to take advantage of those savings?
Right. We also have to look at when you add the extra cost on. I mean, we want to incentivize the switch to electric vehicles. And when do we switch that switch out to, you know, people have got to pay their own way. And it's good to hear that, you know, drivers want to pay that. Let's go to Alice on the phone. Alice, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey there.
I was wondering about the, I was sort of concerned about vehicles possibly being convertible, possibly changing out engines or things like that for people who like older model vehicles or having so much waste after getting rid of your old car?
Yeah, so that is a thing that people do. I've seen that on YouTube, people taking classic cars and turning them into EVs. There seems to be a trend looking at actually old VW Bugs and turning them into EVs, and those and the Corvair also seems to be very popular because of the way that the engine was in the back for that. Dave Tuttle, you know, what about the waste that we're going to see as the United States and other major markets switch to EVs? Are we going to see a collapse in the market for the resale for old gasoline-powered vehicles, and they're going to end up where in the world?
Well, that's interesting. So the average life of a pickup, the last I saw, was about 17 years in the U.S., and the average life of a passenger car is 15. And they just naturally wear out. So I'm not sure there'll be a collapse because we have, you know, there's a certain number of new cars that are sold each year, about 17 million. And then there would probably be a greater number of EVs sold in that mix. And so it's not going to be a switch that goes off. If there's a case where we have a supply disruption in oil, where then there's a big shift because it's hard. Remember the gasoline lines that we had after the hurricane a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
temporarily? Or some of us who were kids during the 1970s, we can remember the gas lines there. If we have some kind of event like that, there may be a rush. But otherwise, I think it'll be more of a natural progression where the auto manufacturers figuring out how to make compelling electric vehicles in every different space, minivans, pickups, SUVs, sedans, so that people have the selection just as they do today of conventional cars, and that'll increase over time. I don't see, unless barring some event that I just mentioned, there being some wholesale deal. Getting back to the...
Running real quick.
Yeah. All about conversions. Those are really neat. Typically, those are going to be special cars that mean something to somebody. An old Bug convertible, for example.
Right. And the classic cars, people say, if you convert it, it's no longer a classic. So we'll see if that holds up or not. But electric vehicles, those are not classic. They are spiffy and brand new, and they're coming on strong, and they are clean, and they are going to be economical. We'll see if consumers take to them. I want to thank all of our guests, Lyle Hofstetler with the ACOG, with the Clean Cities Program Manager. They've got an incentive program for places of work. Doug Melnick, City of San Antonio Sustainability Officer. Dave Tuttle at the University of Texas Energy Institute, and this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.